They took me to a local jail for a couple of days with no food, and then returned us to Lambsdorff. Stalag 8B, later 344. This was a bad camp. They all were bad. There's prisoners of war bound to be on that. I remember when we first arrived there, we didn't drink. And they had a big sump dug, about 20 foot square, with poles around. And the fellows would sit all around it, with a trail of liquid matter running from the camp, to the toilets. And when they all had this, and they stole around, they'd be full up like flies, like birds on a perch. And sometimes the poles, they had poles around, and they would break, and the men would fall in even. You can imagine. I've seen people walking up the side of a public path outside the camp, right near this sump, weekends, just sightseeing. Not a very glorious sight, I'm sure. Anyway, when we arrived back to this camp stop, we'll be read out a charge sheet. And what was read out was what you'd done, whether you liked it or not. And you would get charged accordingly. And all my peers I received were about 42 days. I had 42 days bread and water four consecutive times. This time was for refusing to work. It's in the winter. And cold in the cell, 6x3. No blankets, no bedding, just a board. And in this place, no one would come and visit you, no guards. You just have to knock and knock and knock your door. Once a day, a bucket of water came around to serve all the cells. And because you couldn't get no response to the guards, you wanted to urinate, which you would do in a tin mug, which you had, and throw out the bars at the window. When the water came down, you had no means of washing this cup. So you dipped it in a bucket of water. So you had a few drops of urine in your cup and in the bucket. The time it went all down the line and up the other side, all the other fellows would do the same. And the last man must have had pure urine to drink. This is true. The staff camp I was in even had majors for not having a button on the uniform. Which is pretty hard on them, because your clothes wore out to shreds, nothing. You lost all your buttons, you couldn't replace them. And I know men that's put on a charge for 21 days bread and water for not having a button on their tunic was impossible to obtain. If you had £1 million, you couldn't get a button to anywhere. I was in this solitary confinement for about four times, 42 days each time. One time in the summer, when all the flies were coming through the bars, in their thousands, I used to squat them all day long and pile them up in the corner. And I would have a pile of flies there you could fill a saucepan with. nothing else to do.
And I
do.
The guards came round with balls of string and said, if you want something to do, undo these knots. We undo the knots, thousands of knots. They came back and tied us up with a string. We asked why. They said, because you've tied up our prisoners at Dieppe, raid by the Canadians. And they'd found prisoners washed up ashore with their hands tied behind them and shot. This is hard, but it's understandable. It was just a commander raid, and they're taking prisoners, which you don't need to do. And they jumped overboard, tried to escape, which is understandable, again. But he's been shot by the Canadians to stop them from escaping. Which could be right or wrong, I don't know. So I was tied up, for about 6 weeks, with my hands behind my back. I couldn't wash, had no soap anyway. The only time I go to town, I get a friend to undo my trousers and take them down. Vice versa. And there were men, RAF men, who were tied up for 18 months. After about 3 months, they made special chains with handcuffs to put on their wrists so they could maneuver their arms a bit and fend for themselves. But it was hard for them, and they could not escape. So they used to change identity with other troops so they could go out on working parties and try to escape. I tried 3 times, but was unsuccessful. And was pretty sad about it all. Back to a time when I tried to escape from the coal mine. We went over the coal mine wall, which was about 10 foot high, not knowing that the other side was 25 foot, and being over the top at night, about 12 o'clock at night, and dropped. Granny, my friend, dropped comfortable. But I dropped and twisted my ankle and could not move. Granny dipped my handkerchief into a pool outside the railway, outside the wall, and wrapped it on my ankle. And he hung on to me like, so I was just caught in couple with his girlfriend and assisted me until we got away from the area where we were working. We marched all night, and Granny held me as best he could for hours and hours. But towards the morning, the pain on my ankle had not got better, but the pain, I got used to it. And I walked and walked, and Granny finally let go and walked ahead, and my ankle was so bad I was stumbling and fall, and he was fitter than me, and he would wait for me, then walk ahead, and then wait for me until he got fed up. And I said to him, you go on, Gran, And leave me. If I get caught, that will be one instead of two. But he said no. I'll do my best. And I walked and walked in the end until I was... I didn't know I had an ankle, never mind the pain. And when I hit a little stump or stone, something awkward, I fell over. And after the first day, we rested up somewhere. And we hung around some boating lake. And there was a shed at this boating lake where they were selling cigarettes and lemonade and odd things in Poland. And we thought, well, we'll hang around until midnight, till it's dark. It's in the summer this time. And we'll break into the boating lake shed and see if we can get something to drink and eat. We were hungry, of course. We were always hungry. We went to a house in Poland for some bread, which were our friends, of course. That's all we would get was bread, no butter, no nothing. But I was never a big eater, though I was always hungry, the same as anyone else. But Granny could eat this bread, but I'm afraid we went for bread too often. That's how we were caught. But as I say, we went for bread too often. And I could not eat the bread, it was so dry. I could not get it down. But Granny could. Anyway, at midnight, we broke into the shed on the boating lake. But being wartime, they'd taken all the surplus cigarettes and food or whatever was left, lemonade, away. Understandable. So we broke in for no reason. There was nothing there. So we went to a nearby house, which was Poles, so I'd say our friends, to ask for some food. I saw a face appear at the window, bedroom window, but they would not come down, because at night in these countries occupied by foreign troops was always the same. They were always scared of what was going to happen. Anyway, they had a dog in the compound, and we had to leave because the dog was barking at us and he was suspicious. So we went across some fields to try and reach the road again. And this is a very unusual story I'm about to narrate. There was a man in this field in a long black cloak and a black hat with a mandolin or a banjo, whatever you may call it, playing and singing. And I went to him and said, please can you assist us? We are hungry and tired. We want some food and somewhere to stay. And he went down playing and walking up and down the furrows of this field, which had been ploughed recently or something. I asked him again, he took no notice. The dog came across the field from the house and he barked at him and he took no notice. So after a while, me and my friend decided, well, what can we do? Is he a ghost? Is he human? Or is there something wrong with us? Well, I don't think so, because I can remember it to this day. As clear as clear. What was it? So we left and went on our way. And I think I've mentioned the story before now, how we were caught coming out of the woods onto a roadblock, German roadblock. Just a story which I thought was interesting. And maybe someone else can fathom for us, because I can't. After the coal mines, I always went back to Stalag. Punishment, as I've said before. And I think the next working party, I'm not sure which was which now, I get mixed up, but the next working party, I think, was a place called Kozel, where I went to work on a hospital. And as fast as we were building the hospital, German troops were coming back from the Russian front to the hospital. Casualties, say 20% casualties through bullets and war wounds, and 75% through frostbite from the Russian front. Now, frostbite is a terrible thing. I've had frostbite myself. My nose, my cheeks, my lips, my ears, my fingers, my toes. But some men, when they have frostbite, if they do not receive treatment in time, say frostbite to the toes, they lose their toes, their feet, their legs, complete limb, their fingers, their arm. And when frostbite gets a hold on you without treatment, it's dead at once, the part which is frostbitten. But that's not all. The death creeps up the limb on and on and on until it is abated. And the limb from toe or finger onward just literally rots away. And I've seen this. I've had frostbite myself. But I've seen men had it more severe than me with no treatment. And there's no end to it. Your body just rots away from the point where it starts until it is abated. It's a terrible thing. From Kozel, I went snow shifting in the town of Kozel. It was severe winter, and we had to do lots of snow shifting. And come Christmas, the local burgomaster gave us a football and a Christmas tree for our good work in town, snow shifting. But what good was a football or a Christmas tree without any food? He didn't think of that. But if he did, he couldn't do anything about it, because there were no food. From Kozel, I went to another town, and I think the town was called Kongzik. I'm not sure, but I could find the name of it. Something like that, anyway, to a paper factory. Now, this was all right, but there was a guard there, commander, didn't like me. The Coal Lady, we called him. We had nicknames on this job for lots of people, like Chops. For a foreman that always had a blue chop and didn't shave properly. Another one called Goggles, which was a foreman on the job, a general or whatever you like to call it, a manager. Had a big dose. Wore British leggings. Wasn't very understanding at all. Wore glasses, we called them goggles. Okay. Now this was another winter, so it must have been the following winter. It must be 1943. I used to keep a diary at one time, but when you're a prisoner and you're hungry and lousy and fed up, diaries go by the board, like everything else does. There was a period toward the end of the war, when I went on that march, then to carry a photograph of your wife was much too much to bear, so you tore it up and threw it away. Very hard to understand. Well, I tore up some photographs of fellows during a prisoner of war period, which I wished I'd have kept now. Still, on we go with our story. I went to another cement works, another town, which I can't remember the name. But we weren't there long. One day, I believe, I went with another chap called Agimbar. And straight away we decided we'd try to escape from here. We went, the first day we went to work. And we cleared off. And went through some woods in our British uniforms. And had some old working clothes. But we weren't away long. We were caught the same day, as a matter of fact, and taken back to the same camp where we went from, the cement works. This is unfortunate when you go back to the same camp, because the guards then can deal with you for getting them into trouble. Mostly when you escape and you get caught by other than the guards, you say you're from Lambsdorff, and they take you back to your main camp. Anyway, when they took us back to our working party, the guards put us in an old kiln, like a dungeon, with no windows, and locked us in. And after a while, they came back with a whip. I call it a cat and nine tails, but it wasn't a cat and nine tails. It was just a whip with several lashes on. And they lashed me first. Well, they hurt, but not enough to die about. Well, I never made no fuss. But Agenbar says, "You bloody fool, why don't you scream?" They'd stop then. And when they started lashing him, he screamed, and they stopped. So he wasn't so stupid. I remember Agenbar well. The name resembles a Jewish name to me, but his nose, well, my God, you couldn't have went with the worst chap. Because you could pick him out for London Jew, no bother at all. Still, again, like others that went with me, he was brave enough to go, and you couldn't get many people to go these days. There wasn't much chance to get away anyway. Agenbar from London, I wonder, never seen him since. About every 6 months, we would go back to Lambsdorff to go through the gas chamber, have our air cut off, and be deloused. This was a terrible sensation. This gas chamber was similar to those in Belsen and places like that. But I suppose there must have been a mild form of gas. We used to go in one end, strip off, have a shower, have our hair cut, and send our clothes through separately. And when we came out the other end, we were supposed to be deloused. You can imagine our feelings going through this gas chamber, whether we would ever come out alive the other end. But we did. I went through about 3 times. We didn't always go through every 6 monthly. If we were on a working party where we could keep clean, then that was all right. They left us there. But Lambsdorff was a terrible place, really. My very last working party was a sawmill in a place called Dershow, in Silesia on the Polish border, which now I guess is Poland again, East Germany. The boss of the sawmill was named Winkler, a German Jew. I don't know, he was fortunate to remain in practice. I think he was a bit of a creep. He was a bit of a swine all around. He never did nothing to help us prisoners that worked for him. His wife, his daughter, his son-in-law, they're all reasonable to us, but he was a pig. He used to go drinking all the time and come back and give all his family a dog's life and all his workers. He even stole our prisoner of war rations, what he's supposed to give us, and got caught doing that. He was always off with other women, and really he suffered for that, because we had about 30 or 40 prisoners on this working party, and about 10 of these always got into his house with his wife, his daughter, his maids. And when he was away, we won't say the cat away, the rat away, the mice were at play. They were fortunate to get away with it, because once a month we had to sign a paper to say that if we'd done anything wrong towards the Nazi regime, we would be punished. And if we associated with German women, especially grave cases such as intercourse, the penalty was death. And we had to sign to this fact once a month. So you can imagine, not many went for it. On this working party, Winkler's wife had a goat, and it died, and it blew up fat. All fat and ugly. And Mrs. Winkler said, "Well, I don't know what's happened to it, but if you wanted to cook it and eat it, you can have it." Well, we talked about it, and half of us said, "Yes, we'll cook it and eat it." And the other half said, "No, it must be poison." But whilst it was cooking, it smelt lovely. And when it was finished, and the other chaps ate it, and nothing happened. The rest of us, me included, that didn't have any of it, very sorry we didn't, because we could have eaten and enjoyed it too.